Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Eagles Chargers coming up right here at Ellis Island. Front yard, all you can eat special, all you can drink beer special, all you can drink spirits special. We'll give away a couple of two tops for all you can eat for a future football viewing experience here at the front yard. Come on down. Got the NFR specials on the menu. Parles, Cofield, Mateo's here. Just to close out, we were talking about at the end of last hour, and that was Indiana being in the one hole in this playoff. Got the victory against Ohio State. I saw Mendoza in a pregame interview, and I thought to myself, he's an interesting guy. It's a little bit cheesy. And then the postgame interview, he was really a cheese ball, which there's nothing wrong with. You know, we're so cynical and also kind of mean, and then not me, you guys listening, that someone like that will get kind of beat up. But here's a reality with him. The NFL is kind of mean. And the NFL, with their interviews, you don't know what you're going to get in these interviews and what leaks you're going to get out of the interviews. I am fascinated to see what the reaction is going to be to this kid going through the interview process in the National Football League, and if there are certain organizations who are like, yeah, I don't know, I don't see it.
And then they'll just flip on the game tape and it'll overwhelm it, probably. Or at least it, well, and this is the one benefit for Mendoza being the one quarterback. Like, I expect Dante Moore to go back to Oregon. I expect Arch Manning to go back to Texas. Who else is there, realistically speaking, as a top flight quarterback prospect in this draft?
Saying, I saw one service have Ty Simpson as the top guy.
That's ridiculous. Watch him play the last month. He's probably going back too. But I think Mendoza's going to benefit, kind of like Cam Ward did last year, benefit from being the one guy who all these teams think, okay, he's clearly a top five caliber pick, and he will go. Look, if the Raiders are picking number one, he should be the pick. If the Jets are picking number one after trading up, he should be the pick. The teams that need quarterbacks should be taking Fernando Mendoza if they have the first pick, if they have the ability to get the first pick this year.
Eagles are one against the Chargers. Game's about to kick off here inside of 10 minutes. Total is 42.5. Did you find a first touchdown prop?
No, because all the numbers were pretty similar tonight. So
okay.
The only one that stood out a little bit was Keenan Allen. That was the only one that stood out a little bit.
I'm intrigued by the total. What do you want to do at 42.5?
I'd probably go under. Probably go under. Why? I have no idea what Herbert's going to look like tonight. Eagles' offense has been awful, but you're kind of paying a little bit of a premium with that total so low because of how bad Philly's offense has been and the uncertainty of Herbert's, even though it's a non-throwing hand. We take one shot to that, he's going to have a big problem.
Caleb Herring's going to join us, Football Insider, in about 25 minutes. He, of course, played at UNLV, is on the broadcast for the UNLV Rebels. We'll get into a little more of UNLV losing the Mountain West Conference title game, being booked for a bowl game in Frisco, Texas, the Frisco Bowl against Ohio. But time to recap what happened with the Raiders yesterday, and a lot of what we're watching with the Raiders now is who's on the field, who's going to be here next year, how do the young guys look, also, who's making the decision and what is the future of the decision makers? Jesse Merrick from Silver and Black Sports Network joined me just a couple minutes ago, and we started off the conversation talking about Kenny Pickett got a look, and how did he look?
Yeah, look, I thought he looked exactly like we all kind of expected. You know, he showed off the mobility, got outside the pocket really well, you know, and was just able to get on the move. And I like when the Raiders play with tempo. We haven't seen that enough from them, and I think that's something that fits Kenny's style there. And he's got that, like, gunslinger-type attitude, too. So, like, you could see it out there. And, like, look, that ball to Shedrick Jackson for the touchdown, like, that thing was on a rope. And even the throw to Brock that he missed when they were down in the red zone, you know, not a horrible ball. That's a tough one to place there, trying to just make a play. So I was impressed overall with what we did see out of him, you know, and I think it's kind of about time that we got to look at him, and we'll see what happens going forward with Geno's health.
Any indication what Geno's health is, and if he is healthy, would Pickett still start or Geno goes back in?
Yeah, I think if Geno's healthy, he's Pete's guy. He's going to play. That's my read on the whole situation, even though the season, you know, it, for all intents and purposes, is done in terms of playoffs and stuff like that. And I just think, look, Pete's got his back. That's his guy. He brought him here. He's going to go down with him. You know what I mean? But if Geno's not healthy, yeah, he'll be the guy. You know, they want to see, you know, going forward. I'm sure John Spytek does. You know, again, we've talked many times about my feelings on whether or not Pete Carroll will be here next year. And I would imagine he's probably not, but the rest of the staff, the GM, all those guys that I do believe will still be in town are going to need to get a look at him. So if Geno ain't healthy, yeah, it's definitely going to be Pickett. But again, regardless, if Geno's healthy, I think there's no chance we don't see him out there.
Well, I don't know if you're with me on this one. Jesse Merrick is with us here on ESPN Las Vegas, but to me, Pickett starts the rest of the way because I think you need him or AOC next year. My guess is they're going to take a quarterback with their first round pick, but that doesn't mean any of these guys that are coming out in this draft are polished enough to start right off the bat. So I think you need to know who's going to be the bridge quarterback, and maybe it's neither one of them. Maybe AOC and Pickett can't get it done, but I think Pickett deserves a long look here.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and that's kind of the tough part. Like, a lot of the fans think that as well, but it just seems like Pete, who's really calling the shots, and the rest of the staff in general, because they're following their leaders, you know, orders, don't see that being the case. They're still kind of treating each and every week like it is a must-win situation, you know? And so I think the way they're approaching it is like, we're going to throw the people we think are the best for the job out there, which I know is frustrating to fans and a lot of us in the media, because you do need to find out. Like, with all hope for the Raiders, they're hoping they're going to be able to draft a quarterback of the future in the upcoming draft here, depending on where they're slated. And you need a guy that can kind of, one, mentor him, and two, play until he would possibly be ready to get out there and play if you don't just throw him right to the wolves, you know? So, yeah, I agree. I think we already kind of know who Aiden is. We don't quite know who Kenny Pickett is with this team, you know what I mean? It changes all the time, and there's going to be so much turnover, obviously, you know, in the offseason. But, like, I agree that we need to see an extended look at Pickett, you know, being the guy, you know, right out of the gates. Obviously, we saw him, you know, in short order in Philly and over the years of his career, you know, and things like that when people have been injured, at least since he's switched to more of that backup role. But I'd like to get a full look at him. I just don't, again, think that's going to be the way the staff approaches it if Geno's healthy.
This is, in essence, a four-game test sample tryout for next year. Start building towards next year, which moves us to the offensive line. Yesterday, some more of the young guys were out there. Caleb Rogers got most, if not all, of the time at right guard. All right, how do you think he looked?
Yeah, I thought he looked good. You know, played the entire game. I believe it was 51 snaps, if I remember right, and didn't allow a single pressure. He was one of just two Raiders offensive linemen to not allow a pressure on the day, and that's massive. You know, this is a guy that waited, and, you know, there was all the controversy and stuff when he was inactive for the game and everything. Everyone's saying, man, is he that far off? And again, bit of a head scratcher. Then he comes in, finally does get a shot to play, and he rotates at right guard with Antonio Maffi. So we're like, wait, what the heck's going on? Even in amidst that rotation, he was still, at least according to PFF, the highest graded Raiders offensive lineman against the Chargers. So you're like, okay, we think he probably earned a shot to get the full game. And boom, the staff gives it to him. And, like, I also, too, like, the one thing with an offensive lineman, like, if they're quiet, you don't see anything from them, that's probably a win. You know, that means they probably played pretty well. And that was the case for him. But having said that, even just, like, the energy that he brings. When Geno threw that touchdown pass to Brock, like, he ran over and was so fired up. Like, he just, you know, ran down the field 60 yards, juking everybody in the dust. Like, it was just cool to see a guy like that so fired up to be out on the field for a touchdown. Like, that's where you can just tell it matters to a kid like that. So I just like the attitude that he brings day in and day out. Anytime we've talked to him in the locker room, a real respectful kid. And so it's cool to see guys like that, when they get their shot, play well, especially in a season where the offensive line as a whole has struggled.
Raiders lose again. They're 2-11, and now it's look at the roster, see who's going to be around, see if young guys can play, or you have to go in the draft and get new young guys. And Jesse Merrick does a great job covering the Raiders for the Silver and Black Sports Network. The offensive line had an interesting mix again. I don't think they – well, you tell me, do they have the center of the future on this roster? And could it actually be a guy who's an older guy? Could Alex Kappa actually be the center next year?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be the case. I'll be honest, that'd be real interesting. Pete seems to like what he's seen from him. I actually asked him about that last night because Jordan Meredith – the guy that they had been pounding the table for at center all year, was healthy. Now, look, how healthy was he? That's up for debate, but he was active. And instead, they chose to go with Alex Kappa at center, and Jordan Meredith didn't play at all. He would have possibly slid into that other right guard spot, but that's where Caleb played the entire game. And so I asked Pete, I was like, hey, what was the deal with that one? And he just said, yeah, he was healthy, but they wanted to not have to play him if they could avoid that. So they let Kappa roll out there. Pete noted that he really likes what he's seen out of Kappa as a center, but again, at the end of the day, noted we still didn't move the ball very well. You know, so that's still up for debate. Having said that, though, I think that's probably the best center play the Raiders have gotten all season on the offensive line, which, again, is an indictment on how bad the O-line is, that a guy that's never played center in the NFL can come in and provide you with the best center play you've had. Having said all that, I don't think he's the center of the future. I honestly think they've already got that guy on the roster, and his name is Jackson Powers Johnson. He just happens to be hurt. So I think whenever the next staff comes in, I believe they'll end up moving Jackson back to center and then address, you know, the right guard spot. Maybe Caleb is the answer there, or maybe somebody else is going forward. But I think Jackson Powers Johnson ultimately becomes the center for the Raiders.
Wait, you said the next staff. Is that an entirely new staff, or you're just talking about the bulk of the coordinators on down?
I'm thinking entire staff, head coach and coordinators and everything like that as well. I think, look, I've come around to the idea of it. I don't like it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I do not like this wash, rinse, and repeat of firing and hiring coaches all the time. Like, you heard Antonio Pierce say it could take a decade to repair a lot of the issues that they have because there's just no foundation and no culture set. And you don't get that by continuously firing and hiring coaches. But Pete's age, which I hate playing the age card, with his age and the fact that there was no foundational elements really set this year, and there's not a whole lot that you can point to in terms of saying, like, hey, these are building blocks for them, is why I think you can and should reset and just bring somebody in that you can know will be there for a while, or at least that's the goal, and you hope you don't continue to do this hiring and firing thing.
Jesse Marek is with us here on ESPN Las Vegas. You mentioned Pierce. I wanted to get your opinion on Pierce, because I think he's doing his job as a TV person, an analyst, whatever he's doing, podcasting, all that. I do feel like he's biting the hand a bit that fed him by, and he's being honest, I don't believe it's going to take 10 years to get out of the hole. But I also would like to look back at Antonio Pierce's career, and where was he going to coach if it were not for the Raiders after he headed up the cheating scandal at Arizona State? His reputation wasn't real good. He had money issues. There's some stuff that I think the Raiders and you guys around the media haven't really talked about with AP and his behavior locally when he was the coach, especially before the season. Man, he's playing a really interesting game here by going at, you know, Mark Davis and the Raiders real hard.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think biting the hand that feeds him, or that fed him, is a real good way to put it. You know, this was a guy that was rocking and rolling with the Raiders and seemed like Mr. Raider while he was here. And I will say this, I have a lot of respect for AP and everything that he did. I think a lot of people owe him an apology for what the product looked like on the field. You know, a lot of people saying, like, oh, it's gonna go up from here. Look how bad he was. Well, it actually got worse when he was gone. But having said all of that, to sit back there, say this stuff about Shador, which is so easy to say now, you know, in hindsight, like, oh, we would have drafted him, all this stuff, and start just kind of airing out the dirty laundry. Don't love it, but at the end of the day, you got to pay the bills. And in the media, when you come in and you're that guy, like, you got to let people know what it's like and provide that peek behind the curtain. But I think there is a way to do it. I don't think he necessarily has to twist the knife as much as he has at times. Again, I think the decade thing is a bit much to be able to say something like that. But again, I totally get it because there is just no foundation set there. But yeah, I think the way he's handling it, maybe not be as loud, as boisterous, or as much of like a kind of throw it in your face type of thing, given how much Raider Nation embraced him, and I think this team did, even though it was a one and done.
Were there any other young guys on offense that you saw something from?
Yeah, Jack Besh for sure. I mean, you know, a lot of people have been clamoring to get more of a look on him, and he goes 6 for 6, 6 targets, 6 catches, led the team in receiving yards. I thought that was impressive. You know, this is a guy to me that, and these are very lofty comps and stuff like that coming out of the draft, but a lot of people saying like a Puka Nacua or a Cooper Kupp style type player, and we just hadn't seen that type of usage from him. Then they go and trade Jacoby Myers, and you think, okay, he's going to slot into that role because that's how they had used him in training camp. He was kind of the Jacoby Myers 2.0 when they rolled the second unit out there. Then Tyler Lockett comes into town, takes a lot of those reps away from him. So it's nice to see him get much more of those opportunities offensively. And he came through. He showed real growth. I mean, there were times throughout the year where he got opportunities and he would go out there and make rookie mistakes, whether it was a penalty or not necessarily, you know, lining up in the right spot, whatever it was. He's since corrected that, or at least did in the last game. And so that's a big step forward for a guy like him. And regardless of Dante Thornton's health, this is a guy that does need a larger spot or a larger role in this offense, because he showed you that he could come through in that game yesterday, you know, over to Legion Stadium. So I'm real curious to see what the usage looks like going forward for him. I'd like to see them get him involved more, you know, over the middle and stuff like that, because he's a big, strong kid with strong hands and runs really well after the catch. So I want to see what this kid can do in that regard.
Jesse Marek up on ESPN Las Vegas as we're getting into Monday Night Football here in just a couple minutes with the Chargers and the Eagles. Come on down, party with us at the front yard. All right, on the defensive side of the ball, they did a pretty decent job against the Broncos in game number one. Yesterday, not so much. What was the issue on defense?
I mean, the biggest part on defense, they just couldn't get off the field. You know, that was the biggest issue. I mean, the big thing with the Broncos is they had been struggling running the ball. You know what I mean? But since J.K. Dobbins had gone out, they haven't been able to establish a quality running game. Lo and behold, Raiders come around, they rush for over 150 yards and just cannot get off of the field. You know, breaking off chunk plays here and there. I think they were averaging 4.9 yards per carry. Then on third downs, having issues. And really, for the offense as well, a wildly efficient night for Bo Nix. You know, I think his adjusted completion percentage was like 86% on the day, and they were just content with like nickel and diming their way down the field, and the Raiders just had no answer offensively. And against a team like the Broncos and Bo Nix, who quite frankly had struggled against zone defenses, you just cannot let that happen. So they got to figure out a way to get the tackling sorted out, because too many times that's popped up throughout the year. And then also to just find a way to get off of the field and be better on third downs. That's something that's killed them all year long. Pete noted it after the game. Got to figure out a way. Like, again, the season is lost in the sense of playoffs and stuff like that, but you have to give fans something to look forward to, you know, to point to building blocks. And I think that's something in particular that they need to get corrected in these last handful of games here, to be like, hey, we at least improved on third down, because it's been so bad this year.
Man, maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment, but I can't remember a year with the Raiders recently where special teams missed on so many areas. Like, every area has been a struggle at times. And yesterday, another punt return for a touchdown. That's only happened, what, twice in a season, four times in the franchise's history. What'd you see on that play? And I know, you know, you can't fire anyone else. I guess you could, but they already dumped the special teams coach. But how do you allow that?
Yeah, it's just crazy, because, I mean, you look at who they have in terms of specialists, and I know Daniel Carlson has had a very up and down year. It's been a struggle for him, but he was very consistent for a handful of years. AJ Cole, regardless of like the returns, like, he's actually had a really good season punting and pinning teams down inside the 10. I believe he's tied for the league lead in that. I thought I saw a stat on Twitter about that last night. But the punt coverage, just bad. I mean, I can't remember the final tally, but they missed a handful of tackles on special teams. Had to be at least like three or four of them on that return right there. It's just it's one of those deals where, like, look, you have a lot of the young players on special teams and so many people clamoring for the young guys to play. And I think part of the reason why maybe those guys aren't playing as much on offense and defense until this previous game was the lack of tackling. What are these like big chunk plays that are being allowed on special teams? It's just kind of wild. Because special teams had been a weapon for the Raiders for so many years, and it's just been a total 180 for them in that regard. I think if you clean up the special teams issues throughout the whole season for the Raiders, like, not that it's some massive difference in terms of the record, but they're in a lot more of these games, and they probably have maybe two more wins at least, you know, if they clean that stuff up. So that's one of those things where it's just a head scratcher. People always talk about it all the time, like, you shouldn't have to hear about your special teams, and too many times we've left talking about how horrible their special teams has been this year.
Jesse, we also got to talk about, we're talking to Jesse Marek here on ESPN Las Vegas, live at LL Town, Cofield and Company. The crowd yesterday, was that as bad as it's been all season? We know the Broncos, the Donkey fans will show up. They will travel. That seemed crazy to me yesterday. And I think there's been games where there's been 60, maybe 70% of the opposing fans in the building. That was a freaking avalanche.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And like, look, it's obviously more drastic when they're wearing orange, because it sticks out so much against a lot, some of the black that was out there, you know, in terms of Raiders fans and stuff like that. But so many times, like, I'm looking over at Q and I'm like, wow, how many, you know, I sit next to Q Myers in the press box. I look over at him, I'm like, how many fans are in here? We're sitting there trying to figure out the percentage and stuff. And I'm always surprised when we actually sit back and say, like, okay, it's probably 50%, 50-50 or 60-40, whatever it is. This one was probably about 60-40, and they were loud. Never in a million years did I think we would hear a Let's Go Broncos chant inside Allegiant Stadium or just anywhere where the Raiders play. That's sad. It can't be like that. Obviously, look, the Raiders are a very polarizing brand as it is. So many teams, so many people already had their teams when the Raiders moved to Vegas. And if you're not a Raiders fan, chances are you're not rooting for them. So pair that with the fact that they haven't been very good over the years. And it's an uphill battle to get, you know, your fans to show up for you and not sell the tickets when the product isn't good and when the games have been as bad as they are. So I think it's one of those things where it's like, look, the Raiders got to figure this out, turn it around, and start being good and really building the fan base out here in order to turn that around. Because too many times we've seen the home field advantage is just not there for them, or at the very least, it's like 50-50.
What do you got slated this week on Silver and Black Sports Network?
Yeah, so this week, obviously, the Raiders are going to be hitting the road playing the Philadelphia Eagles. We're going to be talking to Ryan Hoag, former Raiders receiver, just diving into more of the offense and what he saw from a lot of the younger guys. Again, he's one of those dudes that sits up in the press box with me, and his mind for the game is next level. Obviously, anytime you get a former player on, like, they can really break things down a lot. And one of the things I'm really looking forward to talking with him about is the fact that, like, the Raiders' opening drive in yesterday's game was so great. They drive right down and score. Geno was 6 for 6, all that stuff. But then in terms of the adjustments and the coaching, so I want to talk about where they've fallen off after that first drive, because that's been kind of a trend for the Raiders over a lot of years, no matter who the coach or coordinator is. So just want to get his take on that, you know, how much of that is coaching, how much of that is players in terms of adjustments and stuff. And then also we'll be talking to my buddy Jason Dumas from out in Philadelphia. He covers the Eagles. Going to do a bit of a preview there, but more so talk about just how the Eagles built their roster up and maybe some cues that the Raiders can pull from them. And those will be both in our podcast dropping on Wednesday and Friday this week.
Jesse, we appreciate it. We know Mondays are busier for you, so thanks for carving out some time for us, and we'll talk to you, buddy.
Of course, man. Appreciate you. Have a good one.
There he is, Jesse Merrick, as we are rolling on here in Monday Night Football with the Chargers and the Eagles. You got the all-you-can-eat special, all-you-can-drink beer special, all-you-can-drink spirits special. It's Omega Monday. 50-ounce drinks are 2 for 1, and it is happy hour right now up until 7 o'clock. That means just $5 on the craft brew drafts, $7 on the bites. We're going to be munching down on something. We'll see what Parles comes up with as his menu choice here at Ellis Island in the front yard. It's all brought to you by Boomer Sportsbook here on a Monday.
Now back to Cofield and Company for Monday Night Football at the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino on ESPN Las Vegas.
Man, oh man, I'm watching this Charger game. They just can't run the ball. Can't run the ball. Been rough. Oh, wait, am I behind? Did Kamani Vidal just bust off a big run?
Huge pass play to Vidal. Are you?
I was Vidal.
You're stuck. Your closest monitor, you're stuck on the Monsters, Inc. broadcast.
I'm watching the Monsters, Inc. broadcast of the Chargers and Eagles. What is this? Oh, that's interference. I am really like 5 plays behind. It's outrageous.
That was some great coverage on the play that Monsters, Inc. just showed on Wazowski.
Touchdown. Marin Hampton is back. And he just had a good run to the left side and then wide open on a leak out from the backfield, which reminds me of something I saw on Friday night. Let's bring in Caleb Herring, talk a little UNLV football, also college football in the CFP and the Notre Dame angle being left out. Caleb, what's going on, buddy?
A lot. I'm excited still. College football a little bit left. College football player bracket set. UNLV's bowl bound, third year in a row. I mean, I really can't complain going into the month of November.
Do you know Monsters, Inc.? Because Jeff was filling in on all the characters. Why did they make Kamani Vidal so big, Jeff? They just showed the play as he rumbled down the sidelines. He's kind of a monster.
Oh, hey, look.
He's miscast.
So Sully's getting in on the act. That's all it is.
I don't know what the hell's going on here. Caleb, do you know what's going on? I'm lost.
I have children, and yes, I know what Monsters, Inc. is. Don't understand why
I don't know.
Monsters, Inc. was chosen for this special broadcast. I don't know what audience they're trying to reach here.
Me? Yeah, I have zero. Sully just got a 60-yard reception. I have zero interest in listening to Joe Buck and Aikman. There goes Hampton left. And they got fire coming out of their butt. This is pretty cool. I like this version of the NFL. Anyway.
The chain gang is a monster's tongue, Cole.
Oh, is that right? All right.
Yeah, there you go.
I just led in by saying Hampton scored a touchdown on what looked like some broken coverage to the right side, running back out of the backfield, and that's kind of reminiscent of some of the plays that UNLV was on the wrong side of. It was another night of missed assignments and a lack of communication. And, you know, as you and I talked about, maybe this defense is just not built for the sort of discipline that Boise offers offensively.
Yeah, I think the margin for error is just too thin. And you want to give yourself a lot bigger of a margin of error when you're going against a team like Boise that has plenty of tricks up their sleeve, number one. But then just the nature of their offense, I think, is more deceptive than people give credit for. You think about Boise, obviously, with Ashton Jenkins, you think about power running. They've always had a really good offensive line over the past, at least in Spencer Danielson's tenure as the head coach. It's kind of been their offensive identity. But there's a lot of trickery and deception and eye candy involved. And they use those things to jack with your keys. So even if you do have good keys on the base formation, they have so many counters and so many, I'll call them gadgets, that build off of their identity that it's very tough for 60 minutes to stay disciplined and locked in. And like you said, disciplined and locked in, that was kind of the story of UNLV's defensive season. That just was not there. And sometimes the big brother just has your number. And I think that's the case of what Boise State, at least offensively, they just had UNLV's number in the two meetings this year. Fortunately, the offense was able to put up some points in both outings, but it didn't matter because the Boise State offense basically got whatever they wanted from UNLV defensively.
Caleb, I actually thought Calandria, I know the numbers didn't look great at the end, but I thought Calandria actually played a pretty solid game up there on Friday night.
Yeah, I think it was a slow start from an efficiency standpoint, but once he found some completions, especially when he extended some plays and found guys for chunks down the field, I think he got comfortable, and from there he looked like the Calandria we kind of gotten accustomed to seeing. Now, he did make a couple of plays that I think were small but had massive impact that you wouldn't probably remember as terrible, egregious mistakes, but just subtle things that end up costing him drives or potential points that I know he probably already has dissected and wants back. But I think Boise State defensively does a good job of taking away the easy stuff from any offense. And the championship game, they take away the free access throws that usually let Calandria and the offense establish a rhythm early. And they swarmed to the run game. And again, Jet Thomas probably had one of his worst performances rushing the ball, although he did have a couple of things that sprung up. But I think that's what really contributed to the offensive tone. They didn't have a semblance of a running game, really, until spots in the second and third quarter where Kevon Lee was able to break free. And as I mentioned, Jet ripped off a 20-plus yarder as well. But I think Calandria did play well, and I think he did what was necessary for the team to give them a chance. But I think perfection is demanded against Boise, especially when your defense just can't come up with the stops in the second half.
Caleb Herring breaking down UNLV losing in the Mountain West Conference title game against Boise on the road. That was Friday night. They lost 38-21. I don't get their fans in Boise. They're just kind of weird, mercurial, very easily offended, insecure. Why don't they like Maddox Madsen? Because every time I watch him against UNLV, I'm like, this guy's freaking good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe they are just used to, like, the Kellen Moore years, and that's kind of was their ascension to, like, dominance, where they had, like, a Heisman-caliber quarterback, and they're comparing everybody to that standard for some reason. But I think Madsen has shown through his time as the starter that he's capable of being the playmaker that their team needs. And his win percentage is through the roof in terms of that. I don't understand why it seems like they're disappointed with him or looking for something more from him. He makes the plays that he needs to make in order for this team and the system to work. Obviously, the players on the field have an immense amount of trust in him. But he's a quarterback that just makes the right plays. And I don't understand any fan base for that matter, but especially the Broncos, who've been so successful with his style of play, with his game manager style, for them to kind of have a disdain for him is almost what it feels like, or like a lack of trust at this point. It just doesn't seem right. And, that's one of those inexplicable things. Like I have no idea what the standard is or the expectations are with the fan base, but I think they should just be grateful for what Maddox has been, especially against UNLV. He's kind of picked us apart in critical situations every time he plays us.
So at Iowa State, they have a pretty good quarterback, Rocco Becht. Rocco could follow Matt Campbell to Penn State. Let's say Iowa State has $600,000 to go and get a quarterback. Would you go and spend the money on Maddox Mattson or Anthony Calandria?
I would probably lean Anthony Calandria if I was in a position where needing a quarterback and the budget was set. I would look to spend on Anthony Calandria. He had a fantastic season. Offensive player of the year, obviously, in the Mountain West. I think the potential that he brings with him is a lot greater than Mattson. I think Mattson is who he is, and he's going to be that wherever he goes. But I think Calandria still has potential to grow into something even more special than he was this year. And I think the flaws in his game, he understands them better. And I think with his athleticism is the biggest thing. You know, Mattson scored a rushing touchdown against us. He's made big plays with his legs, but he's no Calandria in terms of extending the play and getting things going downfield. And also, while UNLV's offensive line has been good this year, watching Maddox Mattson so comfortable in the pocket every time he dropped back to throw, I don't know that he's capable of making plays through chaos like Calandria is. So that I think will give me more reason to go with Calandria over Mattson. And again, that is something that is unique to Calandria. I think his playmaking ability is second to none in college right now.
I like this new roster building, free agent talk. I wish we had more money knowledge so we could really do it like we do in the NFL. On Maddox Mattson, the Boise quarterback. So you take Calandria over him at $700,000. Okay. Cal, Pitt, North Texas all lose their freshman quarterbacks to bigger deals, right? They're offering Maddox Mattson $500,000, one of them. All three, right? If you're Boise, you got a $2.5 million NIL total budget. You spend $500,000 to keep Maddox Mattson?
That is interesting. I wish, like you said, I knew their whole money model and how they're keeping players. I do think they don't have, I will say this, they don't have anybody else on their current roster that would be valued that high. So I do think the quarterback position is important enough for their system to spend a bunch of money there. But they've also got a defense that I'm sure that they would like to construct and build through when you're talking about their budget, quote unquote, for their roster construction. That's a tough one. I would probably try to avoid spending that much.
Right.
To keep him out of those if I could. But you would obviously have to have somebody in the recruiting pipeline or, you know, somebody with your eye on that you can replace him with if he does bite and go somewhere else. But I would avoid that, honestly, if I could, if I was Boise State.
Yeah. If Rutgers has $7 or $8 million in their total pool, they don't have a quarterback who's necessarily ready. I'd spend $500,000 on Maddox Mattson. You see him kind of trying to wish this into existence, but he's a talented kid. All right, let's look ahead here to the defensive deficiencies at times of UNLV, and a lot of it was assignment football, gap integrity up front. Then linebackers have to be in a position to make up for mistakes. Safeties have to be in position to make up for mistakes. Ohio's got a kid named Pete Navarro who rushed for 891 this year. He's a really good runner. This is going to be a tough matchup.
It is. I think, you know, they've got players on their side of the ball. They've got talent. Someone compared them to Boise State in terms of the way they play, and I haven't really done a deep dive yet into the film, but they're putting up numbers. And I think UNLV has struggled, especially as of late. And we watched, you know, Dylan Riley have a run where he broke like 6 or 7 tackles, and that's just not going to cut it against any quality run offense. And a guy that's creeping up on 1,000 yards is probably licking his chops to get his chance to have a big game in the bowl game. But I think, you know, with what's at stake here for UNLV, I don't necessarily think – I think the Mountain West Championship was obviously, based on the reaction of the players on the sideline, was kind of the the peak of the season. That was the ultimate goal for this year. So my worry is that with the distractions and lack of discipline that went all season, now without that carrot to dangle, that goal in front of you, is there even more mental lapses, if that makes sense? And yeah, obviously the distractions of the bowl game and whatever kind of gifts and arrangements go into, you know, the lead up to the game, does that result in a very distracted UNLV defense and unfortunately lead to a loss in the bowl game? Now, that's obviously something you got to, as a coaching staff, try to work against. But this isn't, you know, it's an unknown opponent, obviously, but this is a talented team. And I know a lot of people may be disappointed with this bowl game seeming like a step down from the LA Bowl of last year. But that's kind of the nature of the thing when, you know, Boise State obviously did make the CFP this year. So the Frisco Bowl kind of is next in line after the LA Bowl, I guess. But I don't think that's a reason for the players to have a lack of focus. I think you want to end the season, your career, what have you, on a good note. And winning a bowl game is still a big deal, no matter what the national narrative is around the collapse of bowl games in this new format.
Okay, let's talk about the CFP. Do you think there was anyone who got royally screwed in the final CFP order?
Well, I think BYU is who I would point to first. When you talk about royally screwed, I think BYU did everything that you're asked to do. One, they belong to a conference. Their only two losses came to the number 14 in the nation in Texas Tech. And one of those two losses was in a conference championship game. And you get all the talk about, you know, why Notre Dame isn't in, because they played a cupcake schedule. They're not in a conference and what have you. They lost two games, the only two games that were serious opponents they lost. And for BYU to get punished for losing their championship game, essentially, is what happened. While Alabama didn't, I think, was the most clear and blatant disrespect between conferences. Like, the SEC obviously flexed their muscles and said, yeah, we have different rules here. So BYU would be the first team that I pointed to. But then Notre Dame has a very strong argument as well, because their results were in. Them and Miami, their results were in. And the committee all season basically said that Notre Dame was ranked higher than Miami. For them to both be done, and then at the moment of truth, those teams get swapped around to put Notre Dame outside of the playoff looking in, I think that was just, it's a bad look for the CFP and the committee. So I, while Notre Dame is a big disappointment, I think BYU probably has a stronger case based on what the committee has said you need to do, and based on the committee saying that they wouldn't punish a team. And it's clear now that they were only talking about Alabama when they talk about not punishing a team for losing their conference championship. So if I was the Cougars, I'd be probably more upset than Notre Dame. So good on them for, at least to this point, I know, not backing out of the bowl game. But I think they have a gripe for sure against the playoff structure.
Well, BYU will be in that Pop-Tarts Bowl against Georgia Tech instead of Notre Dame. But you just mentioned it, Cale. But what are your thoughts on not just Notre Dame, but other programs? Iowa State, Kansas State also declining bowl bids.
Yeah, I think it's up to double digits now, if I remember correctly. The amount
all
of
those five and sevens, yeah.
Bowl bids. Yeah. Yeah. So it's I think it's interesting. I do think that if it's a team voted decision, right, and that's kind of, you don't really know how it came about. You hope that it's not the administration protesting, you know, the CFP, and that's why they decided to opt out. You would hope that this is a conversation that you had with your players leading into it, and the players obviously feel strongly enough to make this kind of stand. But I just don't know what the impact of it will be. And there's been individual players that have opted out for years now, and when thinking about their own individual careers. So it's the opt-out mentality isn't new, but for entire teams to opt out, I think that implies, at least to me, looking at it the way I do, I think it implies that the team decided together that because the outcome wasn't what they thought of the season, it's just not worth it to go out and risk injury, what have you, whether it be the senior leadership or guys maybe planning on transferring, not trying to risk injury at some program with a game that basically they're being told by the national narrative mean nothing these days. And that's not the players' fault that the bowl games have been devalued over the past, you know, decade since the college football playoff started. Some programs do feel like it's a failure to just get a bowl game. And that just goes to show how different things are. I'm not surprised that teams are sitting out. I just hope it's for the right reasons, and I hope the team, the players, had an input on the decision, and it's not just admin throwing a tantrum and trying to protest the committee as it is.
Last 2 minutes, Caleb Herring is with us here on ESPN Las Vegas. We're live at the Front Yard, Ellis Island Casino. Monday Night Football party rolling out here. Chargers out to a 7-3 lead on the Eagles. We were talking about the ever-changing picture of the AFC earlier, and that a lot of the glamour quarterbacks are not going to be most likely in the playoffs. The door's open now for Josh Allen, is it not?
It absolutely is. And I think the Bills have to look at it that way internally, because for years it's been the boogeyman Patrick Mahomes that has kind of denied everybody access to the AFC. Joe Burrow is kind of the only one that has had Patrick Mahomes' number, and he's either injured or out of the thing, you know, week four. So it doesn't – he's not necessarily there. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens were projected to be a dominant force in the AFC. That's not working out. It looks like the biggest competition right now in the AFC is either a 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers with the Steelers defense that just can't stop anybody, or an AFC East opponent rival in the Patriots with a second-year quarterback. If that's not lick-your-chops time for Josh Allen – then I don't know what is. And that's, to me, kind of where he has to be. If he lets, for some reason, Drake May insert himself in the Patrick Mahomes vacancy and take the AFC by storm in this season, I think that's got to be a blemish on Josh Allen's career and really a signal for the Bills that it may be time to blow things up and try a different direction. Now, they have, to their credit, leaned on James Cook a lot more this year. I think that's their formula to make a deep playoff run. But the AFC is being so wide open. I don't trust Drake May or Bo Nix in the AFC as it stands right now to be the guys to go win a Super Bowl against whoever comes out of the NFC. I don't trust that right now. So it's up to Josh Allen, I think, to break through the seal and finally get into the Super Bowl at least. I don't know about winning it because, again, the NFC is pretty strong. Whoever's coming out of the NFC is going to be a battle-tested opponent, but getting to the Super Bowl with the way the AFC has kind of been shuffled this year, I think is the standard, really, for Josh Allen and the Bills.
By the way, last 30 here, Justin Herbert has an opportunity, too. A lot of the highly touted quarterbacks are not in his way. Now, starting tonight with a win would be good. I'm just going to say this. On the home front, you know, I'm with a Chargers fan. I got to keep expectations real low. We don't talk about Chargers winning a playoff game. We don't do any of that. Keep them low. I mean, and then no one gets upset.
If the Chargers, if they get healthy up front, they are dangerous. I mean, that's been their biggest hurdle this year, why kind of the noise around their potential has gone away. They just, all those talented offensive linemen they drafted have been hurt all year. So if they ever get healthy, you're absolutely right. They're built for playoff success. It's just health has just been an Achilles heel. No pun intended for them.
Caleb, good job, man. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, guys. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the night.
There he is, Caleb Herring. Here on this Monday night, he was excellent on the broadcast. So was Matt Nevert. But when things were going wrong defensively for UNLV, Caleb had some real good rants. Especially there was a pass out to the flat to Malik Sherrod that went for 39 yards. He got perturbed. Bad tackling and perceived effort was not there. Or his perception of the effort was that it was not there. So, frustrating loss for UNLV. They do have a bowl game, a good matchup coming up on December 23rd against Ohio in Frisco, Texas. We'll get you an update on Chargers and Eagles on the way back, and we're getting ready to host the party here. Front Yard, Ellis Island, if you are out and about, get on down here. Pretty full house, but still plenty of room to come on in. Enjoy the all-you-can-eat menu. Enjoy the all-you-can-drink beer, all-you-can-drink spirits. Got the holiday nog in the house. Got a giant ribeye they're doing, a cowboy-cut ribeye that sounds delicious down here at Ellis Island.
Cofield & Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
All right, 7-3, Chargers on top. I did get a text from home the SO said, wait, I'm watching some cartoon version of the game. I'm like, the game's actually on. You'll be able to find it. It is entertaining, though. The Monsters, Inc. game is entertaining. The first quarter on that game has actually not ended. That version, the real version, it ended. Second quarter now.
Big day for Mike Wazowski so far.
So goofy. I love it. All right, rumors out there about next step for Notre Dame, because it sounded like they were kind of threatening the ACC, pissed that the ACC pushed the narrative of Miami over Notre Dame. Well, Notre Dame's not really part of the conference. They want every benefit of being in a conference, but they actually don't want to be in a conference. Notre Dame to the Big 12.
If they were to leave the ACC, you go call the Big Ten up, see if they're willing to do the scheduling thing, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know who's going to do it. I know if Notre Dame's in a pickle if they drop the ACC with these conferences going to 9 conference games. And guys like Sark saying, hey, why are we playing anyone outside of conference? What's the freaking point? It might be a little hard for Notre Dame to find a full schedule of games against Power 4 schools.
Join one of the conferences. Just do it, finally.
Well, who's on more solid footing, ACC or Big 12?
Neither.
I know,
that's
right?
The problem.
I don't know why they would pick one over the other, but we'll see what develops here. I don't think this is going to happen tomorrow. All right, get on out here, front yard, Ellis Island. We got cool prizes, all you can eat, all you can drink beer, Mega Monday, big 50-ounce drinks for 2-for-1. We'll see you down here, Ellis Island.